In Matthew 18, Jesus said that the kingdom of heaven is made up of people who are like children, who are innocent and full of faith and wonder and joy. In fact, Jesus said, unless you become like children, you don't belong in the kingdom of heaven. A few years ago during VBS, we had hundreds of kids here, hundreds of adult volunteers, teenage volunteers, all kinds of people here. I decided to do a sociological experiment to see how people see the world based on their age. And so what I did was, with all of those, I divided into three groups, right? You got kids, teenagers, adults, and I asked them all the same question. All week I would ask these kids and teenagers and adults the same question, and the question was, how's it going? That's it. Nothing fancy. I'm not leading anybody. I just, how's it going? The kids group, 91% said, good. At first I thought that was maybe just like a lack of conversational skill. Maybe that. Or maybe they really see things as good. Maybe this is what Jesus loved about them, that they see the world with this innocence, with this faith, with this joy, with this wonder. The teenage group, 89% said, tired. I have many comments on that, which I'll save right now, but what I will say is this. I think partly that's because just of the demands all of a sudden on them for school and social stuff and sports, and some of them are just starting to work, but also I think they're starting to experience stress. And they're starting to experience worry. So yeah, 89% of teenagers were tired. 92% of adults said busy. And some of them I think were bragging, and some of them I think were complaining. But almost 100% of them said that they were busy. And then most of them started telling me how stressed out they were, how much pressure they felt, how exhausted and anxious they always were. So it was just interesting to me, as a sociologist, that kids are good. They're joyful and happy. They see the world as a place of joy and peace and wonder. Kids were good. Grown-ups were busy and tired and stressed and frustrated and anxious and angry, and it just brought up this real question to me, and that is, what happens to people? You know, what, as we get older, what changes that makes our outlook on life go from that it's good to just being busy and tired? And so as a scientist, my first hypothesis was that it was about height. That as you get taller, we stop seeing the world as good, and all of a sudden we start feeling like we're tired and busy. But I know that's not right, because I know a lot of short adults who are busy and tired and super grouchy. So it's like, it's not height. That hypothesis got ruled out. My second hypothesis was adult teeth. That maybe when you lose your baby teeth and you get your grown-up teeth, that's when, you know, we start seeing the world in a darker, worse way. But it can't be that, because I know lots of babies that don't have any teeth at all. And they're mostly very happy. And I know some pretty grouchy old people who have lost their adult teeth. So it's not height, and it's not adult teeth. And I thought it was Velcro. Because, you know, when kids go from Velcro shoes to lace-up shoes, that's about the same time that they start seeing the world as tired and busy instead of good. But again, that's not it. Because I know a lot of grouchy old people that also have Velcro shoes. And also, most kids today wear Crocs, so Velcro's kind of out anyway, so that's not it. So my current hypothesis that I'm working with is naps. When kids stop taking naps, that's when this slow transition starts from good to busy and tired. When kids take naps, just for a minute, they just don't work. And they don't worry about what's next or what's going on with the economy or what other people think. They just stop. And naps are awesome. Even when they're involuntary. I always think of when my oldest grandson, Graydon, was little. He was maybe, 3 or something. And Margaret and I had him for the day. I mean, we did it all. It was grandparent, you know, first grandkid. So you can, I mean, we candy, ice cream, cake, cupcakes, donuts, you name that stuff. But also, we were just going, man. We went to the zoo. We went to the park. We went to a ball game. We went to a movie. We're running and gunning and playing and digging and riding and doing stuff all day, all day. That night, we ended up at our friend's house. You know why? Because they had goats, and we wanted them to play with those goats. And so we're at their house. They got a bunch of dogs and donkeys and goats. He's playing with all those things. Now it's 10 o'clock. Now it's 11 o'clock. We're in their living room, and we're talking and all that stuff. And here's Graydon. He's, you know, 3 or 4 years old, and he starts doing this. Right? I'm like watching him just, and just his, all of a sudden his body just went nap time, bam. And he fell right on his face. He didn't even put his hands out. And he didn't even wake up. He just stopped. And in that moment, he didn't care what was going on in the world. It wasn't his problem. And he didn't care what the economy was doing. And he didn't care what the government was doing. He didn't care if he was going to get a promotion. He didn't care if anybody liked his last Instagram post, right? He just stopped. He was just like out. It was so beautiful. Just laying there, peaceful, smiling, still, drooling. And what I've noticed is that most tired, busy, stressed, anxious, grouchy adults don't do is take naps, although a lot of them drool. And my theory right now is that the reason things don't seem good to us as grown-ups is because we're so busy and we're so tired. Maybe what we're missing, maybe what we're needing, maybe what we're craving is just naps, just a time to just stop running and working and worrying and stressing and just for a minute to just believe that God is in control, to just so believe that everything's okay, that we can just rest. Now, is my experiment unscientific? Maybe. Is it just plain stupid? Probably. Did I completely abandon the scientific method? Absolutely. But I think there's some truth here. And I think we all know it. I think deep down we all know that if we're going to see life as good, right? With that wonder, with that joy, with that peace of a child. If we're going to see life as good, if we're going to have that childlike faith and peace and joy that the kingdom, Jesus said, is all about, if we're going to have that, once in a while, we need to stop running and working and worrying and stressing about what's going on in the world and the government and the economy and whether we're going to get a promotion and whether anybody liked our latest post. I think deep down we all have a craving, a real need to just stop and take a break and just rest and smile and be, because we're all busy and tired and burned out just from the frenetic pace of life. We said this last week, but 100 years ago, most people in the West slept 10 hours a night. Now we average 6 or 7. And of course, there's seasons of life where it's unavoidable, but for most of us, it's not seasonal. It's chronic. And we just accept it as just, you know, life. So we just stay busy and tired and burned out and frustrated and anxious and restless. And I think we all know that we're in desperate need of rest. And you know who else knows it? Advertisers. Yeah, they sell it, man. Everywhere you look, somebody is selling a version of rest. Southwest Airlines. What do they say? Don't you want to get away? What are they selling? This is an invitation to escape from work and worry and stress. IKEA says, welcome to the power of comfort. What they're saying is that there is actually power in rest. Casper mattresses, promise, better sleep, better you. Right? They're selling this idea that your real life begins when you finally get rest. Apple whispers the lie. It just works. Right? They're selling peace through this imaginary world where technology doesn't frustrate you. The Calm app. It's called the Calm app, right? It literally sells the value of rest with this promise: sleep more, stress less, live better. And maybe the best one, I'll show you the commercial. Take a look.
Meet me by the sea again, past the point the shoreline bends, where the sand is soft and warm and hangs upon your golden arm. It's
Corona beer, the official beer of Home Church. So listen. We'll edit that out of the stream today. They're not just selling beer, man. They're selling a moment, right, of peace and rest where time stops, where stress disappears, where we can just be. And all of these ads tap into something deep in the human heart. And it's this ache for stillness. It's this longing to stop striving. This longing, this desire to just for a while be. And I think our culture is obsessed with finding this place of rest. And so what do? We try to buy it. Or schedule it, or stream it, or drink it. And what these advertisers are describing, without even saying the word, is Sabbath. They're naming this rhythm of just stopping and delighting and reconnecting and being restored. Even Anheuser-Busch knows we're not made to run endlessly. And in this crazy, frenzied, hectic, overstressed world, we need rest. And those products don't really fix it, because those products mostly fix our like physical exhaustion, and they don't even address mental or spiritual exhaustion. Because even on the beach with a Corona, we can still worry about our jobs and our responsibilities and our future, and our money. Even on a trip with Southwest Airlines, in the plane, you can still read the news and worry. Even sitting by the lake, we can still look at social media and get caught up in the anger and the polarization of politics. Even on vacation, most of us still get notifications. So they refuse to let us really disconnect and rest. So in spite of our trips and mattresses and apps and beer, we're more exhausted and frustrated and anxious and irritable and burned out than ever. Because the world is selling us on our need for Sabbath. But they don't offer real Shabbat Shalom, the peace of the Sabbath. And you might be surprised to know that stopping to rest wasn't invented by Corona or Casper or IKEA or Southwest Airlines. This idea of stopping to rest is built into the fabric of creation. From the very beginning, God himself stopped. Genesis 2:2 says, on the seventh day, we talked about this last week, God finished his work, so he rested. Now this word rested is the Hebrew word Shabbat, Sabbath. And it literally means to stop. God didn't rest because he was tired. He didn't stop. He didn't Shabbat because he was tired. God stopped because he was satisfied. The work was complete, and he delighted in it. We said this last week, a great translation of the verb to Sabbath is the English verb to still. On the seventh day, God finished all his work, so he stilled himself. Exodus 20:11 says, in 6 days God made the heavens and the earth and the sea and everything in them. But on the seventh day, he rested. So in this passage, the word we're translating to rested is this word nuach, which means to settle down. It means to like settle in, to abide, to just like be. So God instituted the seventh day as a day for man to Sabbath, to stop, to still himself, and to nuach, to settle down, to settle in, to just abide, just to enjoy creation. So you guys are experts on Genesis 1 and 2. In the creation story, what day were Adam and Eve created? Yeah, day six. So what that means is the first full day that Adam and Eve ever lived was a day of rest before they had done a single thing. And I think that's really important because it shows us that in God's plan, rest was never meant to be a reward for finishing your work. It was a starting point for living in God's rhythm. So while the world sells us rest as a product, God offers it as a gift, the gift of Sabbath. Sabbath isn't just a nap or a vacation. It's a weekly rhythm of trust. It's a weekly rhythm to remind us that, one, we're not defined by our output or our production. We're defined by the love of our Father. And number two, we don't hold the world together. God does. And we trust him. So we find our real rest in that. We find our real rest in him. Jesus didn't say, if you're exhausted and frustrated, exasperated and tired, have a Corona or buy a new mattress or go on a trip or get a new mat. He said, Matthew 11:28, come to me if you're weary, if you're frustrated and anxious and exhausted and carrying heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. He says, take my yoke on you. Let me teach you because I'm humble and gentle at heart, and in me you will find rest for your soul. So in first century Israel, they saw human beings as being three parts, right? The soma, in Greek, that's the meat, the body, the flesh, the soma. And then the psyche, which is your mind, your soul, your preferences, your personality, and then your pneuma, which is your spirit. So we were soma, psyche, pneuma, body, mind, spirit. And the thing is, it's not just our bodies that are exhausted. In fact, I think there's even a deeper exhaustion of our souls. I think our minds are exhausted. And no wonder, man. I mean, some indicators say that from the year 2000 to right now, the cost of living is up 88%. That's almost double. So how can we not think and worry 24/7 about how to keep up and how to pay bills? And what if the government shutdown affects my Social Security? And what if we have layoffs at work? No wonder our minds are just exhausted. Plus, the world has gotten so weird that it's hard not to constantly worry about our kids. No wonder our minds are exhausted. And you know, our phones mean we're never really off duty because every vibration or every ding reminds us to keep thinking, to keep stressing, to keep on top of everything. No wonder our minds are exhausted. And it's not just work calls and texts and emails. This constant stream of news, right, is just constantly bombarding us with something else to agitate us, something else to worry about, something else to get angry about. And then social media is literally constantly notifying us of some other way we aren't measuring up, of someone else we could be jealous of something else to be scared of something else to be angry about. I think more than our bodies, our souls and our minds are just overworked and overwhelmed. No wonder we feel busy and tired and stressed and frustrated and hopeless and angry and unhappy. And as big a problem as our exhausted, burned out minds are, the burnout and exhaustion and frustration isn't just a mental problem, and it's certainly not just a physical problem. At its core, it's a spiritual problem. And you know why? Because we follow Jesus. And Jesus said the most important thing is to love God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, and to love your neighbor as yourself. Yeah? We're Jesus followers, right? How many Jesus followers? Most, okay? So for Jesus, the ultimate objective of our spiritual formation, the measurement, the metric that we use to measure our progress as Jesus followers is our love. In fact, if you want to know how you're doing in your spiritual formation, if you want to see how Christ-like you're becoming in your spiritual formation, the measurement isn't your theology. It's not even your morality. It's how you love God and other people. But the more exhausted we are, the harder it is to love. Agree? It's hard. I mean, it's harder to love God when you're tired. Jesus said one of the ways we show God our love is through obedience, right? He said, if you love me, you keep my commandments. It's hard to be obedient to God when you're worn down. In fact, scientists tell us that a lack of rest, one of the things it does is it erodes energy from our prefrontal cortex, the part of the brain that controls our impulses. So what's that telling us? When we're tired, our defenses are down, we're more vulnerable to temptation and sin. And it's hard to even want to pray or worship or spend time with God when you're tired. It's hard to love God when you're exhausted. And it's hard to love people when you're tired. It's not an excuse, but if you think of like, don't share this with others. Think of your least loving moment, right? Think of the worst of you with friends or kids or parents or spouse. Didn't that happen when you were stressed? Didn't that happen when you were tired? Didn't that happen when you were in a hurry? And it kind of makes sense. If you remember Psychology 101, remember Maslow's hierarchy of needs? Remember that? Oh, I've got a diagram. And so what this is saying is, this is like a list of all the things that human beings need to really flourish. And at the top of the list are the higher needs, right? Self-actualization, esteem, and love. But we can't even get there. Like, we can't even think of the higher stuff until we have our most basic needs met, until we get the base level stuff that we need to survive, like food and water and air and rest. We can't love people well when we're exhausted. So if we can't love people, we can't love God when we're exhausted. This is a spiritual issue. And God's solution, the Sabbath. It's a weekly day of rest for your body, for your soul, and for your spirit. It's a spiritual issue, man. It's not God's will for you to have a life that is so chronically exhausted and unhappy and frustrated and angry that you can't love. That's the enemy's will. Right? He came to steal and kill and destroy. Jesus came to give us a life that he said was rich and satisfying and abundant. That the enemy's will is for you to be so frustrated and so anxious and so exhausted that you can't love. The enemy is anti-Sabbath. Right? He'd love nothing more than to keep you so worn down that you can't live the life of love that Jesus came to give you. He would love nothing more than to keep you too burned out to become like Jesus. And that's why, as apprentices to Jesus, we keep saying we have to be intentional about our spiritual formation. Right? We want to become like Jesus. We want to become a person of love and faith and peace and be fully connected to the Father and to the people around us. And Sabbath is intended to be a weekly experience of spiritual formation. Yeah, we're resting our mind, we're resting our body, we're resting our spirit, but the point of it is to have spiritual formation as we exercise our faith, because we're resting in God's provision. We're resting in the grace and freedom and healing of Jesus. And we're just reconnecting to the Father and to the people around us. Sabbath isn't just rest for our bodies. It's not just rest for our minds. It's intended for our spiritual formation. It's intended to help us become more like Jesus. And the biblical model, the model Jesus followed for rest, is Sabbath. So here's the disclaimer. Again, you don't even have to tell me, because I'm going to tell you. There's not one person in this room that thinks they have time for Sabbath. So save your emails, right? I'm tell you now. I've already said it. You don't need to get redundant here, right? Everybody has a reason they can't, right? Well, I'm type A, Larry. You don't know me. I'm type A. You know, I've got a demanding job. You know, I've got really busy kids. Oh, I just started a business. Listen, those are all 100% legitimate. But can we agree on this? Even in those things, especially in those things maybe, we want to operate at peak efficiency, right? If you're raising busy kids, don't you want to do that well? If you're running 10 businesses, don't you want to do that well, right? If you're trying to be a good spouse or a good business partner or a good neighbor, don't you want to do that well? God designed you to function best and most efficiently in this model of Sabbath. It's built into the fabric of creation. We work for 6 days, we Sabbath for one. Listen, every society in history has been built around a 7-day work week. Every society in history. And that's really weird, because it's really the only unit of time that's not based on like the rotation of the earth, right? Or the orbit around the sun, or the lunar cycle. But this 7-day rhythm of 6 and 1 is the rhythm that was designed by God. And in 1793, during the French Revolution, the French government tried to stop it. They had a better idea. We were going to go from a 7-day week to a 10-day week to increase productivity. And you know what happened? Productivity cratered. There was a national crisis of mental illness and suicide. And now, almost 250 years later, our generation is reliving that scenario. And it's not because of a government mandate. It's because of the, I think, demonic conspiracy of the hectic pace of modern life. Electricity and the alarm clock and the car and the internet and the smartphone and a tough economy and our love affair with sports and activities have just created this world where we just go and go and go and go. We never stop, and we just stay exhausted and stressed and frustrated and anxious and angry. And you know what? That's from the enemy, right? I mean, it's almost self-evident. John 10:10, Jesus said, the enemy comes to steal, kill, and destroy. I came to give you this amazing life. Exhaustion, stress, frustration, anxiety, crushed relationships, distance from God. Do you think those are products of Satan coming to kill, steal, and destroy, or Jesus coming to give you a full, abundant life? It's just obvious. God created the whole world to live in a rhythm. There's a rhythm between day and night, right? It's not just humans. Animals wake and sleep, right? There's a rhythm in nature between the noise and activity of spring and summer, and then the quiet stillness and dormancy and quiet of fall and winter. Our bodies have rhythms as we inhale and exhale. Our hearts beat in a rhythm. And when we lose those rhythms, when we get out of the rhythm of God's creation, we get sick. And we lose part of our humanity. When we live without Sabbath, it's like we're going against this rhythm that God built into us and built into all creation. And I heard somebody said, when you go against the grain of the universe, you get splinters. Right? This 6-in-1 Sabbath rhythm is built into the fabric of God's world, just like gravity. And if you fight it, you will face the consequences. And that's true on the negative side. We've all experienced it, right? When you don't Sabbath, the consequences are fatigue and burnout and frustration and stress and brain fog and trashed immune systems and frayed relationships and distance from God. But it's also true on the positive side, because when we do keep the rhythm of Sabbath, we reap the reward. We become people of faith and joy and rest and patience and peace. We become childlike people. We become kingdom people. We become people like Jesus. 4,000 years ago, God said to his people, remember the Sabbath and keep it holy. Keep it separate. Keep it sacred. Keep it special. Remember the Sabbath. This is a day once a week where we just remember that there is a creator God who loves us and who is providing for us. And we remember that there's an intentional rhythm to creation. And we remember that we don't stop when we're finished, because we're never finished. We stop when the rhythm that God built into us says, stop. We remember that we are not who we are by what we do or what we produce. Who we are is found in our identity as the people that God loves and created in his image. We remember that our life is not just a right that we have or a responsibility that we have. Our life is a gift from God. And we remember that even though the world is broken and full of evil and injustice and jacked up, it's also full of goodness and beauty and truth. Sabbath isn't just a day off. It's a way of seeing the world and God and us. It's a practice that's designed to return us to God's original design and make us more like Jesus, and to transform us from being restless to being restful, and from being anxious to being peaceful, to transform us from busyness to margin, to transform us from burnout to joy, and from noise to quiet, and from distraction to clarity, and from angry to loving, and from busy and tired to good. Sabbath isn't just an idea. It's a practice of Jesus. It's a habit. And like all the practices, it's a means to an end, right? As we're going through this, we have to keep reminding ourselves that the end goal here is not that we practice Sabbath correctly. I've already been fielding questions like, well, what can I do, right? I know I'm supposed to rest, but what can I do, right? Well, how long does it have to last? And it's like this, we're not under the law, right? This is, we said it last week, it's not a law for us to keep. It's a gift for us to enjoy. The end goal is not to practice Sabbath correctly. Our end goal is to really connect to the life and love of our Father, right? The end goal is to really experience his kingdom of love and peace and joy and purpose and rest and healing and freedom and community. The end goal is to become like Jesus, a person of love and peace and joy and purpose and rest and healing and freedom and community. And I know, I'm experiencing it too. It's a real change of lifestyle, and it's going to take some figuring out, and it's going to probably take some trial and error. But we're Jesus followers, right? We believe in Jesus, right? We believe he knew what he was talking about. And I can't believe how many people are scared right now. People are like, I don't know if I can do it, man. I don't know. It's like, what are you? I'm not asking you to fly, you know. It's like, it's good news. This is good news. This is, maybe that's why they call it the good news. This is good news, man. You don't have to live a Sabbath-less life of stress and anxiety and frustration and exhaustion. You, right now. No matter your job or your stage of life, you, in some way, you can adopt the practice of Sabbath and begin to really connect to the Father and begin to really experience the love and joy and peace and rest and energy of his kingdom. You, right now, at where you are, can be, actually become transformed into a person like Jesus. And you don't have to buy a ticket from Southwest Airlines or a new mattress or an iPhone or a six-pack of Corona. Although we do get 10 cents on every six-pack sold. That's just what I'm saying. Listen, you don't have to buy anything. All you have to do is stop. That's this week's goal. Just stop. So starting this week, let's learn how to do that together. One baby step at a time, okay? It's scary for all of us. So here's your homework for this week, and you can discuss it further in your groups. Number one, it's a hard one. Try to actually sleep 8 hours a night. It's weird. I've been trying to do it, and you'd be surprised. It's weird. Try to actually sleep 8 hours, not a night, like one night. I say to sleep 8 hours per night, every night. Bonus points, as you go to sleep, thank God for his faithfulness. And remind yourself of how he's always taken care of you and how he's taken care of you today. Maybe even doze off as you list some of the good things that God blessed you with today. Homework number two, try a Sabbathito, right? Because I know everybody's saying 24 hours. No, just if you're not up for a whole day right now, pick a morning or an afternoon or an evening, maybe this afternoon, just for a few hours and isolate a time and block off a time for a couple of hours to just stop working and worrying and stressing about anything, not just your job, about anything. God is faithful. God has always been faithful. He's always taken care of us. He's taken care of us now. He always will. God is faithful. We're going to rest in that. We're not going to worry. We're not going to work. We're not going to stress about anything. Instead, just rest or read or walk or eat or play a game with your kids or talk to a friend. During that time, what's going to happen? Satan hates this, that we've established that. You're going to have this little red guy on your shoulder right here with a pitchfork, and he's gonna say, shouldn't you be working right now? Right? That garage is a mess. Oh my gosh, did you see what Donald Trump did today? Right? Let's check social media and see what parties are going on that you weren't invited to. Right? All of these things are going to be popping in. You know, if you worked overtime, you could get a new car. Right? And all of these thoughts are going to start coming in your mind. I'm telling you from experience, this is what's going to happen. When it does, when you feel like working, or when you start to worry or stress about like what you should be doing or what you should have done or what you can't have or what you wish was different, Paul said, take every thought captive, right? And so that's what we're going to do. Just say out loud, I trust God. I know he loves me. He gives me everything I need. For right now, that's enough. That's your homework. That's your assignment should you choose to accept it. Let's pray. Father, just we thank you, first of all, just for your amazing world that you've created and this like rhythm that you've built into everything around us that somehow I've been oblivious to. And so thank you for opening our eyes to this rhythm, the way that you created us to be. And thank you, God, that you want to spend time with just us, just being with us, not us performing for you, not us working or stressing or worrying, but just for us just to rest in you. We don't have to work for our salvation because Jesus already took care of the work. We just rest in that. We don't have to worry about provision because you provide all of our needs. The Bible says every good thing we have is a gift from the Father. So we thank you that you are that good. And God, I just pray that as we try this thing, it's going to feel weird to us, it's going to feel foreign to us, and as we ease into this slowly by slowly, God, just remind us the purpose of this is it's not for us to keep rules. We weren't made for the Sabbath. Sabbath was made for us. This is not a law for us to keep. This is a gift for us to enjoy. So I pray, Lord, that we'll do it, that we'll just, every night, we'll make it a point to turn off that last sitcom or whatever and just go to sleep and sleep 8 hours. And then that, if it's not 24 hours, if it's not a full Sabbath, it'd be a Sabbath-ito for us, God, that we just at least pick out a block of time, a few hours, that instead of stressing and worrying and working, we will just rest. We will just nuach. We will just settle in and settle down and be with you and with the people we love. And God, we thank you for Jesus, because through him, this is all possible. Because our Sabbath is in him. Our rest is in the work that he's already done for us. So thank you for Jesus. In his name, amen.